You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. Coming up, the top U.S. diplomat urges U.S. lawmakers to grant the president more power to combat Islamic State militants. We'll have a report from the front lines of a Syrian village under Islamic State attack. And we'll hear from Nigeria's president about links between the Islamic State and Boko Haram. I'm Michael Lippin. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has urged the U.S. Senate to approve President Barack Obama's request for formal authorization to use force against the Islamic State group. Appearing before the Foreign Relations Committee on Wednesday, Kerry said such approval would show that Americans are united in wanting to defeat the militants and anyone associated with them. President Obama already has been using his legal powers to take action against Islamic State, but Kerry said congressional authorization would give the president more flexibility to direct a successful military campaign. Iraqi government forces and Shiite militia allies have entered the strategic town of Tikrit after a 10-day offensive to drive out Islamic State militants. On Wednesday, the coalition of anti-Islamic State forces moved into Tikrit's northern Qadisiyah district in an operation to outflank the militants who seized the city in June. Tikrit was one of the largest Iraqi cities overrun by the militants last year. French authorities are investigating whether two Islamic State militants, one of them a boy, featured in a new video, have connections to France. The video, released online this week, shows the older militant and the boy standing behind a 19-year-old Israeli Arab whom they accuse of being an Israeli spy. At the end of the video, the boy is shown shooting the Israeli Arab in the head at close range. The slain man's family has denied that he was spying for Israel and said he went to Syria to actually fight for the Islamic State group, but later had a change of heart and wanted to return home. A French official told the Associated Press on Wednesday that the two militants in the video are thought to be French citizens. Well, Islamic State militants have launched a major offensive on the region of Ras al Ain in northeastern Syria. VOA Kurdish Service reporter Zana Omer was in one village under attack on Tuesday and has been able to send in this report narrated by Robert Rafael.
Fighting is intensifying in and around Sarakanya as Kurdish YPG forces try to hold back Islamic State militants. The militants appear bent on regaining momentum after a series of territorial losses, among them Tal Tamer. Now the YPG faces hundreds of IS fighters who have laid their sights on the village of Tal Kanzer near the Turkish border. YPG fighters, backed by coalition airstrikes, were able to push the militants out of Kobani earlier this year, proving themselves among the strongest anti-IS combatants on the ground. Kurdish forces have attracted a handful of foreign fighters, Americans, British, and others, to their cause. In Tal Kanzer, these volunteers, like many of the YPG forces themselves, appear woefully under-equipped.
Yeah, well, I'm way off range.
Yeah, I know, bro, I know.
We need to get a map.
It's not clear how long they can hold out against the heavy weaponry of Islamic State fighters, who are also pressing in on the villages of Ahol, Tal Barak, Tal Hamas, and Tal Tamer. For Zana Omer in Tal Kanzer, Robert Rafael, VOA News.
Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan says Boko Haram fighters are being trained at camps in the Middle East run by Islamic State militants. The president sat down for an interview with VOA reporter Chris Stein in Abuja on Wednesday, 4 days after Boko Haram's leader publicly pledged allegiance to the Islamic State. Mr. Jonathan said his government has known that there are links between the two groups.
Some of the Boko Haram members go to have their training in the ISIS camp and come back. So the linkages are known, and it's not just now that we know by the linkages.
Well, Mr. Jonathan also predicted that an ongoing multinational offensive will oust Boko Haram from the territory it controls in northeastern Nigeria within the next 3 weeks. A member of the Russian Kremlin's Human Rights Council says there are reasons to believe the prime suspect in the killing of Russian opposition leader Boris Nemtsov confessed under torture. Andrei Babushkin told reporters on Wednesday that he had seen numerous wounds on the body of the suspect, Zaror Dedayev, during a visit to his prison cell on Tuesday. Babushkin wrote on his website that there were reasonable grounds to believe that Dedayev and another suspect were tortured while in custody. Well, the United States will provide an additional $75 million in non-lethal equipment to Ukraine, including counter-mortar radar, drones, radios, and medical equipment. The Obama administration said Wednesday it will also impose sanctions on a handful of pro-Russian separatists and others blamed for the civil war that has torn apart Ukraine's eastern regions. The new U.S. aid does not include the weapons that Ukraine has sought and that many Obama administration officials and members of both parties in Congress have urged President Obama to provide. The political fallout continues over a letter sent on Monday to Iranian leaders by freshman Republican Senator Tom Cotton and 46 other Republican senators. The letter warned Tehran that any deal reached in the ongoing international talks to curb Iran's nuclear program would not last after President Obama leaves office. VOA's Cindy Sain reports from Capitol Hill.
At a Senate hearing Wednesday, Secretary Kerry called the letter irresponsible and said it breaks with 200 years of presidents conducting U.S. foreign policy.
No one is questioning anybody's right to dissent. But to write to the leaders in the middle of a negotiation, to write them and suggest that they're going to give a constitutional lesson, which, by the way, was absolutely incorrect, is quite stunning.
Kerry is leading the Iran nuclear negotiations, which resume next week in Switzerland. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Bob Corker is co-sponsoring bipartisan legislation that would let Congress weigh in on the merits of a potential Iran nuclear deal. Corker did not sign the letter, but said he was disappointed by Kerry's comments that Congress cannot modify a deal.
You've gone back on your statement that any agreement must pass muster with Congress. The way we pass muster here as we vote.
Cindy Sain, VOA News on Capitol Hill.
And before we go, U.S. military officials say rescuers have found human remains in the search for an Army helicopter that crashed off the Florida coast with 11 soldiers on board. A spokesman at the Eglin Air Force Base in Florida said debris from the wrecked Black Hawk helicopter was discovered early Wednesday after it failed to return to base Tuesday night. The missing include 7 Marines and 4 members of the National Guard. Authorities say a dense fog advisory was in place for the region during the mission with reduced visibility. That's it for International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin.
I'm Jim Stevenson with Business News on The Voice of America. U.S. stocks ended lower for a second straight session Wednesday as worries increased the Federal Reserve could bump up rates as soon as June, and the dollar strengthened further, dampened the outlook for U.S. corporate earnings. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell almost 27 points, or about 0.15%, to close at 17,635. The S&P 500 also losing, down to 2040, and the NASDAQ composite dropped 9.85 points, or about 2%, 0.2% that is, to finish at 48.49. The U.S. government is taking the nation's biggest satellite TV provider to court, accusing DirecTV of misleading millions of consumers about the cost of its programming. The Federal Trade Commission said Wednesday that its complaint charges against DirecTV with deceptively advertising a discounted 12-month programming package. It says consumers were not clearly told the package requires a 2-year contract. The FTC said the advertising also did not make clear that the cost of the package would increase by up to $45 more per month in the second year, and that there was a hefty early cancellation fee up to $480. Wireless equipment maker Ericsson says it will be cutting 2,200 jobs in Sweden as part of a $1.1 billion savings package. That's 9 billion kroners if you're keeping track in Swedish currency. The Stockholm-based company said the layoffs would mostly affect research and development and supply positions. Ericsson is a leading maker of mobile broadband infrastructure. It said Wednesday the cuts were part of a savings plan announced back in November. And Ukraine expects to receive $5 billion $1 billion in credit from the International Monetary Fund in the coming days, according to the country's finance minister, the first in a series of bailout loans. That's Business News on VOA. Well, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is perhaps the most famous address in the world. Of course, it's the White House here in Washington. So perhaps people in Pennsylvania would know that address? Well, however, a man in western Pennsylvania, in prison, admitted mailing a threatening letter to President Barack Obama. He sent it to the wrong address. Joseph Savage mailed his letter to 1400 Pennsylvania Avenue. Well, the White House got it anyway, and he pled guilty.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. A huge garbage patch in the North Pacific Ocean traps debris from both hemispheres and is a major environmental threat to sea life. Michael Sullivan joins us from Honolulu, where researchers are tracking the trash that covers a huge swath of the Pacific.
The culprit is plastic, which finds its way into waterways and eventually the ocean. Scientists at the University of Hawaii head to sea in research vessels to monitor the effects of the trash on marine life. The trash concentrates in five of the Earth's ocean gyres, which are naturally occurring circular currents, says marine scientist Dave Carl.
As you get closer and closer to the center of that, the central axis of that feature, the waters become more quiescent. So they tend to trap floating debris.
The Pacific trash patch is famously as big as the U.S. state of Texas, but Carl says what is seen from passing ships is mostly empty ocean.
The impression that people, I think, got about this patch was that it was a solid mass of plastic. You could almost jump off your boat and walk across the state of Texas on this plastic footing. That's not the way it is at all.
He says the churning of the ocean quickly reduces much of the plastic to a chemical sludge. Alan Clark of Hawaii's East-West Center says it is dangerous in that form, since tiny plankton organisms consume the particles.
That are eaten by things like jellyfish, who turn out to be one of the favorite food of larger fish. And then you go through the food chain to tuna and things of this nature.
And the cycle is completed as people find the plastics on their beaches and chemicals in contaminated food. These scientists are tracking the impact of pollution in the North Pacific, but they say pollution is a problem in all of the Earth's oceans. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Honolulu.
The U.S. Capitol Dome in Washington, D.C. is recognized worldwide as one of the most enduring symbols of the U.S. government and American democracy. Now, since last November, the dome has been wrapped in metal scaffolding and fabric, all part of a long overdue renovation project. VOA's Jeff Custer is in the cafe with more on that.
The last time the U.S. Capitol Dome underwent a renovation was in 1960. Since then, the dome has become weathered and worn, and as the architect of the Capitol reports, has more than 1,000 cracks and other defects. The dome was first completed around 1863. Its cast iron frame, says U.S. Senate historian Don Ritchie, has contributed to that weathering.
The Capitol dome being cast iron has been hit by lightning countless times, and it's been weathering that position since 150 years, since 1863. And it has been leaking lately. And there's a lot of artwork inside, including the big canopy in the center. And so the current construction is to repair the leaks, to fill the cracks, to take off excess layers of paint, and to paint it again.
As the work to remove old paint and apply primer continues, a large section of the building is covered by plastic and a special pink fabric designed to reduce wind and protect workers from the elements. Much of the construction is done after dark to prevent the noise from disturbing lawmakers who continue to meet inside. Some visitors to the Capitol, hoping for a souvenir picture of the usually gleaming dome, have been let down by the current view.
It was dramatic. It's very fantastic. It's all white. But when I come here today, it's under construction, so my family can see it clearly.
The project is expected to take more than 2 years to totally complete. It is scheduled to be ready for the inauguration of a new president in February of 2017. Jeff Custer, VOA News, Washington.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. It's available every day at voanews.com and many podcast platforms.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. You might know soprano Sarah Brightman from her smash duet with Andrea Bocelli, Time to Say Goodbye. Or you might recognize her as Christine from Andrew Lloyd Webber's The Phantom of the Opera. But now the 54-year-old singer hopes to perform where no other professional singer has before, in space. Brightman has been training in Star City near Moscow for a 10-day trip to the International Space Station later this year. She told a news conference that sometimes she struggles to believe she is actually making this trip.
And there are moments, though, when I come away from it and maybe have a little time where I'm allowed home, or I go somewhere for a weekend, and I think, my God, have I really done that? Is this really, really happening to me? But the training is hard. I mean, there's no denying that, and it's probably not for everybody. But I'm learning huge amounts just about myself doing it, what I'm capable of.
Sarah Brightman says that singing in space presents some very special challenges, including working in microgravity. And the way that your lungs, sinuses, and voice work is very different in space than it is on Earth. But Brightman said she has been working with her ex-husband Lloyd Webber to create a special song just for this trip.
So I'm trying to find the piece which is beautiful and simple in its message, as well as not too complicated to sing. I have been working a little with my ex-husband, Andrew Lloyd Webber, who's actually come up with the most beautiful line for something. So we're just taking it slowly at the moment. But I don't want to, obviously, because of the complexities of this, I don't want to promise too much.
Sarah Brightman would not say how much she paid to go on this trip, though news reports have said it is more than $52 million. The journey is being arranged by the private space company Space Adventures, and two other people will join Brightman on the trip. Sarah Brightman told reporters that she has talked to others who have sung in space, including former astronaut Chris Hadfield, who did his version of David Bowie's Space Oddity on the International Space Station. But Brightman says she doesn't want to promise too much because of the very different environment of space.
So I'm going to try and do something which is very simple, that doesn't put too much stress on me or the fellow cosmonauts up there, so that I can deliver something. And I think that everybody on Earth will, if they're interested and want to watch this, I think they'll understand if I can only get so far with it. Because in a way, it is an experiment. That's my experiment up there.
For the soprano, a trip to space has been something she has wanted to do since watching the first moon landing as a child. She predicted that liftoff and seeing Earth from space will be very emotional experiences for her.
I think the moments of, obviously, liftoff will be incredible. The moment really after insertion, when you're orbiting and you look out of... I've got a window on my right-hand side, and apparently when you first look out of it, and everybody who's... the commander who's taking me up, I think he's looking forward to seeing my face when I first... because apparently you have this like real mixed emotion of joy and sadness and all sorts of stuff that happen that you don't really have on Earth. It's an amazing, amazing emotion.
Sarah Brightman's flight on board a Soyuz rocket is planned to lift off on September 1st. Until then, she will continue her training outside Moscow. So have you ever dreamed of going to space? Are you a Sarah Brightman fan? Let us know your thoughts by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And remember, you can email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
Well, apparently a gentleman knew the address of a certain shoe store. He was an ex-con who had just finished a 15-year robbery sentence. He admitted to robbing the same New Jersey shoe store, and the same clerk happened to be behind the counter. Prosecutors say 41-year-old Christopher Miller robbed a Stride Right store in Toms River, New Jersey in March 2014, came back to rob it again, and, of course, he fled on foot. He was caught. Time for sports on VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson. The United States is experiencing a gradual decline in the number of golf courses in the country to correct an oversupply between the 1960s and early 2000s. That, according to a global report published Wednesday by the sports governing body. The study, entitled Golf Around the World, said there are 34,011 golf courses in the world, 45% of which are in the United States. The current total of 15,372 courses in the U.S. is down from a peak of over 16,000 following a gradual but steady market correction, according to the report. Although there are 153 projects in various stages of development, the number of new courses still being opened is at an all-time low. Golf, meanwhile, is swinging into action in South Africa at the Shawnee Open, which begins in Pretoria today. Mark Tompkins is there, where Ross Fisher sets out to defend his title.
The Shawnee Open visits the Pretoria Country Club for the first time as defending champion Ross Fisher looks to hold on to the title he won in Centurion last year.
Yeah, it's always nice to come back and defend the title. You know, it's only the fifth time I'll be doing it. So, yeah, just excited to be back in South Africa again playing and just looking forward to the week ahead.
Fisher ended a four-year wait for a win with a three-shot victory over Ireland's Michael Hoey and South African Denny van Tonder. The Englishman finished second in South Africa in the Nedbank Challenge in December. Another Fisher plays this week, having tasted success in East London last time out. Trevor Fisher Jr.'s fine performance earned him his first win on the European Tour, and he'll be keen for another good showing here. Also in the field is Andy Sullivan, who's bidding to become only the fourth player in history to win his opening three titles in the same country, having won the South African Open and the Joburg Open a fortnight ago. Another South African who'll feel at home this week is George Coetzee, who's been a member here since an early age, and he won the first event he ever played at 10 years old over nine holes on this course.
Mark Tompkins reporting. NASCAR has lifted its suspension of Kurt Busch and ruled the former champion can compete in the title chase should he qualify. Busch missed the first three races of the season when NASCAR suspended him over an alleged domestic assault on his former girlfriend. That's a look at sports on The Voice of America.
There has been a growing trend in recent years that rock and pop artists release albums with tunes from the so-called Great American Songbook. That's the music written and performed throughout much of the 20th century by artists such as Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra. No, that's not Frank Sinatra. It's actually Annie Lennox, the latest to join the ranks of rock singers turned standard artist. As lead singer of the Eurythmics, Lennox topped the charts in 1983 with Here Comes the Rain Again. Annie Lennox's latest solo album, Nostalgia, features a number of songs, such as Billie Holiday's big hit from 1939, God Bless the Child. Hello, mommy. Yeah. Another pop singer dabbling in music of the past is Lady Gaga.
After one old quart of brandy, like a daisy I'm awake, with no bromo seltzer handy, I don't even shake. Men are not a new sensation. I've done pretty well, I think. But this half-pint imitation put me on the brink. But I'm wild again, beguiled again, a simpering, whimpering child again, bewitched, bothered, and bewildered. Come on. I couldn't sleep and wouldn't sleep till all came and told me I shouldn't sleep, bewitched, bothered, and bewildered.
Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered first heard in the Broadway production of Pal Joey in 1940. Other singers who've recorded songs from the Great American Songbook include former Beatle Paul McCartney, Queen Latifah, Rod Stewart, Harry Nilsson, and the list keeps growing. And after many hits earlier in his career, Nilsson turned to the oldies with It Had to Be You.
It had to be. I wandered around and finally found somebody who could make me be true, could make me be blue.
That's music on VOA Global. I'm Steve Norman.
Glad just to be sad, thinking of you. Some mothers I've seen, it had to be me.
Did you know that you could not own a ferret in New York City? That's true, and it will remain an illicit pleasure after health officials failed to overturn a decades-long ban on the furry mammals. The City Board of Health voted 3-2 with 5 abstentions in favor of lifting the ban, but 6 votes were required for passage, according to a spokeswoman for the City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. We appreciate the board's concern for the health and safety of New Yorkers in their decision to keep in place the prohibition on ferret ownership in New York City, a city health department said in a statement. The board was considering repealing the prohibition on keeping ferrets in New York homes as long as they are vaccinated for rabies, according to the health department. New Yorkers in a recent poll were torn over allowing ferrets to join the ranks of pets, with 39% agreeing that they should be permitted, another 42% opposing the weasel-like creatures. Domesticated ferrets live an average of 6 to 8 years. They sleep much of the day and spend much of their waking hours building a reputation for being mischievous and playful. Other than New York City, having a ferret is also banned only in California or Hawaii, according to animal advocacy groups. The health department in New York says ferrets have informally been banned as pets since 1959, that according to the New York Times. Well, we're certainly glad that you included us in your daily plans and listened to VOA Global today. We invite you to come back tomorrow for another edition. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Zubir Osman, and managing editor Diane Gao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope you have a wonderful day.